This is Oscar Baker speaking, Bible teacher. And on the other side of this cassette, we have our first study in Revelation 20. Sort of a continuation of several months ago when we were working on the first chapters of Revelation. We're down to 20, verse 6. And we just read the first part of that. Blessed and holy is he that has part in the first resurrection. His first resurrection. On such, the second death hath no power, but they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. Now this is a millennial picture, as we have been saying. Reigning with him, I do not know what all will be involved. I know that Christ will be ruling over the nations of the earth, from pole to pole, with a rod of iron. That means the security, the manner of ruling as with a rod of iron. Now, where do you get that rod of iron anyhow? I suppose somebody is thinking here on that. Why? The psalmist said, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. What does he mean? Well, a shepherd carried a club made of awfully hard wood, if it was made out of wood, that he could beat off animals with, even a lion. And he had to be pretty quick with that and handy with it. And times there were that that rod was iron. Now, you don't think of a shepherd, you see, ruling his sheep with a rod of iron. It's the nations that he rules a rod of iron, the enemies, the lions, the bears, and so on. They're kept in line. I know that a lot of people never stop to think about this ruling with a rod of iron, as you find in Psalm 2. It means that it's going to be a rule that will be perfect as far as making people behave is concerned. They can't do otherwise. And we're told in various references, and I'm not going to give those to you now because I don't have them here handy. I think I have it right here at my right hand, just within reach without moving. I could get them. There are some promises made and some records made of these things that show us the character of the Lord's rule, that, well, for instance, there is to be a judgment every morning. And the judgment will be right at that time and the sentence passed at that time. And the wicked will be destroyed. The last verse of the book of Isaiah gives you a picture of how this judgment will be and what the result of it, and so at Jerusalem, just in a few words. The old valley of Hinnom, where at one time Israel had sacrificed their children to the god Moloch, an iron god with the breast, a door that could open up, they could build a hot fire inside of this god and toss little babies alive in there for a worship. And so later on, that valley, which had been so desecrated by such awful things, was made the city dump. And so in the city dump went not only the trash and stuff that could be burned up, but also dead animals and other things like that, and maybe the kitchen refuse too, I don't know. and the bodies of executed criminals. And it was burned day and night. It kept that dump a-going. A big city can have a pretty good-sized dump, you know, where they had to get rid of things. In fact, right in this present age in which we're living now, they are looking all over, trying to find places where they can dump all of the refuse, and especially poisonous things and so on. I know our own county right now doesn't seem to be able to find a place for what they call a landfill. What to do with all of the trash and the poisons and so on that come from our civilization? Well, back in the time of Israel, Jerusalem, they had a city dump to take care of the things that were unwanted. I don't know whether they had any old paper to burn at that time or not, but there probably was plenty of wooden materials that they threw with, broken and so on. Anything that wasn't wanted, old clothing and whatnot, was thrown there, and it kept burning along with these dead bodies of animals and the bodies of criminals who were executed. They were not given the benefit of a burial. Now, and it says that the people who travel the highway leading to Jerusalem from the various nations, they can go by and see this. Just read the last part of Isaiah there and get your little description of that. Actual things that have happened during the millennium. As I said, he's going to rule with a rod of iron, and there'll be a trial every morning. And not only that, but they'll be tried by what they have thought of doing and planning to do rather than what they've actually done. Now, their judge will be able to read their thoughts and judge them according to their thinking. Be a pretty good idea for a man to get his thinking under control by that time, wouldn't it? Might get caught. And so there will be a fire burning day and night in that valley. And what the worms don't get to eat, the fire will consume. Seems there are going to be plenty in there for the worms to eat. And that'd be enough to keep the fire going all the time. Now you see people take that as being figurative or something like that, or something's going to happen hereafter, after death and so on. Well, that came from the heathen. That was their idea of a punishment after death, because they, I believe the lie, believed the man had an immortal soul, and that he'd be tormented forever and ever if they didn't behave themselves. That all came from heathen stuff. You don't find that in the Bible. No such thing. God isn't that kind of a God. With God, the supreme penalty is death. And so it is in our society, isn't it? I don't think that we have very much of torturing of criminals in our country. We hear once in a while where some authority will run amok, and there'll be some things going on that are not lawful, but they'll have to pay for it. There's no indication that there'll be any suffering and torment because of people's wrongdoings, this capital punishment. And we get that in mind, it'll help us a lot. And the second death doesn't have any power over these, doesn't have power over those who are believers. In other words, they will have the absolute assurance of a resurrection. The second death, which is the annihilation of these, can't have any power over them. They're going to live, they're going to be resurrected, because they believe. So if the second death has no power over it, it means that they are saved and that they have no danger of them passing off the scene and not being anymore. It's that simple. It's too simple, isn't it, to really be believing our minds that are so befuddled by the lies of Satan. Well, they shall be priests of God and Christ and shall reign with him 1,000 years. And when 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison he gets another chance? No, he never had a chance after his rebellion in the first place. He did it all in one stroke. He was a sentient being. I mean that he was full of wisdom, and he was beautiful, the most beautiful creature probably God ever created. And he knew, and he still knows. But there's one thing that's the matter with Satan today. He knows the scriptures, he can quote them to you through and through. He quoted to Christ, he quoted to others. But he can't believe it. There's his limitation. He stepped over the line, and he can't believe it. And we have people today who know the Bible, can quote from it, and even preach from it. And yet they can't believe it. You can get to that point. When Satan quoted to Christ in the wilderness in the trial there, the temptation of Christ, Satan didn't believe what he was quoting there. He was only taunting Christ. He said, if, making fun of him. And so he'll be loosed from his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth. Gog and Magog gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. Satan's going to make his last stand. And there'll be plenty of people even then who'll be fooled. No difference how good that millennium might be. And of course, remember, there were a lot of those heathen, a lot of those kings that they raised because they had to kowtow and obey Christ. And so when this fellow comes along, they are ready to follow him and wage war against Christ and run him out of the world. That's their plan. And so you gather them together to battle, the number of whom is the sand of the sea. This is going to be something far greater than the Battle of Armageddon. That'll be bad enough. Blood flowing like a river and all of that. But the Battle of Armageddon is spoken of as God's supper. And those that are invited to that supper are the birds of the air and the beasts of the field to eat the bodies, the flesh of kings and priests and all that sort of thing of the heathen. But you don't find that in this case here. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about, which would be Jerusalem and the beloved city. And what happened? Who started the firing, or did any firing ever start? Did the battle ever start? There wasn't any. No Battle of Armageddon here. They're in camp. They're all ready to go. Got everything ready. The airplanes and all of those missiles and everything all ready to shoot. And all at once, there's a blaze comes out of the heavens like an atomic explosion. And when the dust clears away, there's nothing. Not a body to bury. Can you imagine it? A great host, great number, no man can number, and now absolutely disappears from the earth. And so fire came down from God, out of heaven, and devoured them. Well, I guess that that is a merciful end for such miserable creatures as that. There's a bright side to it, you see. Creatures like that can never enjoy themselves. They can never be happy. That'd be hell to them, as we use the term today. And the devil that deceived them wasn't burned up by that. we take it that he was a creature superior to that particular fire that came down from heaven, destroyed these folks. And so he slipped out of it. But he was taken and cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and that word are is in italics. And you go back and you'll find that they were cast into that lake of fire. And so it should be where the beast and the false prophet were cast. And we have defined this, what, 5 years of fire. Nothing literal about it. It would, if it was, it would have to be something far hotter and greater than anything we've ever experienced or seen on this earth. Because it means the absolute extinction, the end. And it'd take more than fire we have any idea of or revealed to us to make a complete end of sin and of death. Can you think of a fire hot enough and of such a character it can destroy sin? Think it over. So it's something else. And God can bring those things to an end. Just as if it was something material burned up in a lake of fire. A lake of fire, probably something like the rolling billows in a live volcano. And after all, Satan isn't the kind of a person that could be destroyed in a literal lake of fire and brimstone. A spirit being. And so the whole thing comes to just this, that this second death, this figurative speech of fire and brimstone, means that's the end. It's called annihilation if you want to. I know there are a lot of scoffers that speak about annihilation, but they don't believe that God made everything that we have out of nothing. If they did, they could believe that he could turn it back to nothing, wouldn't they? Be reasonable. If he had the power to make everything that there is out of nothing, then he certainly had the power to transform it back again into nothing. Why can't people be a little bit reasonable? The word says, come and let us reason together. Well, let's do it. And should be tormented day and night forever and ever. Now, there's a word tormented, which can be used in many ways. It can be used of iron being beaten on the anvil, shaped, formed, and something, and so on. Whatever material it may be or not be, and so on, it is something that will not exist again as Satan, the false prophet, and the beast, and so on, is something else. If it, there's a transference. And forever and a day, forever and ever. Well, how long will that extend? How long is forever and ever? Well, people say, well, that's absolutely unending. Well, just wait a minute and think something. There's a time coming when they have a new heavens and a new earth, and there won't be any night. Does this apply? Well, we're getting into trouble, aren't we? Forever never has to do with ages. Someday the ages are going to quit. We're going to eternity again. Remember that the ages, as we have them, and the record of them, are only a parenthesis in time. Just a little parenthesis in time. Actually, time itself can't be measured unless you have certain measurements called ages. Well, now let's get into some philosophy, and I think I better stop there for the time because on that subject, because we're getting into pretty deep water, and I'd have to go way around Jones's barn to explain it. At any rate, as far as these beings are concerned, it's the last of them. They won't be seen anymore. And then, after that's out of the way, I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. A lot said there. Now, we spoke of thrones where princes met and so on, and talked about that in our lesson, as being silk cushions and so on, but also kings of old had thrones, action. There have been thrones made out of solid gold, worth a nickel or two, and quite often, all carved and fixed up with animal figures and plants and so forth, and plenty of gems, precious stones set, beautiful things. I remember I told you that was a cathedra, a chair, a throne, and that the cathedral then is where the throne of the bishop is. Now, some of these thrones were rather high. High enough, indeed, that there had to be a footstool. Now, that footstool could either be a separate piece of furniture, which would be pushed up there so he could set his feet on, because he'd be way above the floor, or it could be a part of the throne itself fastened to it, a step. And that was quite often true. Now, if he should make his enemies his footstool, as we find in the prophecy, it means he'll literally, that is, he'll be expressed figuratively, I'll put it that way, by a footstool to king sits in his throne, keeps his feet on. It's absolutely under his feet. That's the idea. And that's what the idea of being under his feet is. Footstool. The step. And the throne on which to rest his feet. Now, back in Isaiah, in the 6th chapter, he saw a throne high and raised up. No doubt it had a footstool on it. Might have even had a small ladder to get up into it. High, raised up. And there's a white throne. Now, if it were what a lot of people would say it is, it couldn't be a white throne. It'd be anything else but that. If it's what tradition says it is, it'd be a black throne. Have to be. But it isn't. It's a white throne. Remember that. Not only its own character, but the character of the one who occupies it. White. Pure. Perfect. Clean. And from whose face the earth and the heavens fled away. I have found no place for them. When that is set up, there will be no more need for the earth and the heavens that are above it. Doesn't mean the heaven of heavens here or anything like that. It's the earth and the heavens. It's in creation in Genesis 1. Now, I said it's in Genesis 1, and I mean just that. But that earth at that time lost its form. It became empty, became a great wilderness and an overthrow. And what had been in perfect order at one time, no water on it, and all of its precious stones and metals and so on, in perfect order, and this great flood of water came upon it, and the heavens And by the time they got through with it, we have this mess that we have today. We look about us, broken rock, ground up rock, and great upheavals have been made. If perfection was lost, maybe at the Grand Canyon was cleft open at that time, and the earth shaken and faults made and so on. It was in pretty bad shape, because it says, and it became empty, waste. And it tells us in Isaiah 45:18, I believe it is, that God did not create this earth a waste, a void, empty. He didn't create it that way. He created it perfect, and it was to be inhabited. And that makes us wonder who those first inhabitants of the earth were. Well, not too much trouble, as I said, going to Ezekiel 28, Isaiah 14, places like that. You find that this earth was settled by Satan and his angels. A beautiful garden. No water, no dust, no dirt. No trees, flowers, plants, and so on. Everything was bright and shining with beauty. A mineral beauty in one way. And beings that were inhabiting it didn't have need of any food growing. Plants, animals, and so forth had no need for them. But they lost their Eden. Satan, his ambition, overreached himself. He was going to be like God. He was going to establish his throne above God. So he was going to do everything. He was going to do great things, as so many people today will do. And he lost it. Now, we don't find the devil appearing before the great white throne, do we? Well, he's been taken care of. The verse before. He's been taken care of. That's done. And he doesn't exist anymore. But here are the dead. The rest of the dead that we had mentioned are raised. Now, they had to have life or they'd never be raised. That is one of the principles that run clear through the Bible. Everlasting life is obtained in Deuteronomy 8:3, and exactly the same way it is in John 3:16. One is for Israel, the other is for Gentiles. And so he saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were opened. Plural, books. And another book was opened. So there are books and a book. Oh, another book was opened, which is the book of life. All who have life are written in the book of life. And that book was opened, and the roll called. And the dead were judged out of the things which were written in the books, according to their works. Unbelievers are never judged according to their works. Has nothing to do with it or whatever. The fact that they're unbelievers is all that's needed. It's so hard for people to believe the truth, to believe in Christ. Christ came and died for sinners. He took their place. He suffered for them instead of them having to suffer for themselves. He died for the ungodly. And the sacrifice was sufficient. God accepted it and raised him from the dead, proving that that was sufficient. And we have the record in 2 Corinthians 5:19, even during the kingdom time, that God was in Christ, reconciling the world unto himself, not imputing their trespasses against them. And people cannot believe it. That is one verse in the Bible that Christendom today almost 100% says, no, no. Can't be. And in doing that, they are trampling underfoot the blood of Christ. denying his sacrifice. And that is one of the main tenets of Christendom today, basing it on the great lie of Satan that man has an immortal soul and he can suffer forever and ever for his sins, leaving Christ out of the thing entirely, ignoring his sacrifice for sin. I can't lay it on too heavy. It's an awful thing when you come to think about it, that the mass of people who name themselves after the name of Christ today can believe such horrid things. But that's it. Sorry I have to criticize, but that's the truth. And so here are this people born, and they're judged according to things are written in the books. This is the bema, the judgment seat for rewards, the same as we have in other places. Israel has a judgment. And the Gentiles, which belong to the church, which is the body of Christ, have their judgment, reward for the things they have. Look in Colossians, the second chapter, especially the last verse. And so every group of people has, that belong to God, has its judgment. There's even a judgment of some nations on the earth, as you find in Matthew 25, as to whether they have life or not. And so he is here. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell delivered up those dead which were in them, and they were judged, every man according to their works. Can't be unbelievers. They're not judged by their works. They're judged because they do not have Christ. They never accepted him. That's all the judgment, the basis of judgment there is for them. That tells the whole thing. Going into any detail of what they have done and haven't done is absolutely unnecessary. The fact that they're unbelievers spells their doom. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. That is, that's the last one. And this is the second death, which shows that there are two different deaths. And there is one from which there is no return. The second death. It's final. Any who do not have part in that first resurrection and the rest of the dead here at the great white throne judgment, they no longer exist. Never raised from the dead. Forgotten. In fact, God never named them in the first place. He names and gives a new name to those who believe. We find an example of that in the writings to the seven churches in chapters 2 and 3 of this book of Revelation, that the believer is given a new name and written in a white stone. Nobody knows it except him and the Lord. A new name. There'll be a great multitude of these people at this great white throne judgment, which will go on then into the post-millennial kingdom. Remember that Christ is to reign until all enemies are put under his feet. And then he has a reign, a great reign. And not until this great white throne judgment here has all been taken care of. The last of the wicked are done with in that great fire from heaven. And here now are all the dead who are Christ are raised finally. They've been raised in different ranks. But here is the final rank. And they will go into the millennial kingdom with him and reign with him 1,000 years. Folks, this is realistic. This is not a dream. This isn't something off out in the space somewhere where you wouldn't know and so on. It's on this old earth. And this old earth won't be changed very much during that millennium, excepting the land, Israel's portion of it. And it will become like a garden. It'll raise the fruits. It'll be the land, milk, and honey at that time. And verse 15, and whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. Now this is not according to the Greek. And remember that the translators had already been obsessed by traditions. It should read, "And if anyone was not found written in the book of life, he was cast into the lake of fire." And after all of that screening, and after all the judgments they have during the millennium and so on, you think there's any chance that anyone will come up with this great white throne judgment? Doesn't have his name written in the book of life? Any chance? I should say not. Now we have a little bit of time left here. About 10 minutes. So we can go into chapter 21. And I saw. Verse 20 starts out, and I saw an angel come down from heaven. Verse 21, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth. A new heaven and a new earth. Now, if you folks have seen my chart, and many of you have, on the ages, some people call them an eyebrow chart. There are three circles there that look about like eyes. And I enumerate there the earth that then was, according to 2 Peter, and the world that now is, and the world to come. And each of those worlds consists of an earth and a heaven. The earth and the heaven, as you find in Genesis 1:1. And after the 6 days of Genesis 1, we have the present heaven and earth. And Peter speaks of that. Heaven and earth that are now. And then here, we have a heaven and an earth that is to be. Wherein dwells righteousness. This earth is a testing ground. And when it comes to the end of this present heaven and earth, they pass away with a fervent heat, probably remelted to make a new heaven and new earth like the first one was. No dust, no dirt, no water, but a perfection in which there is no chance of erosion, of decay, of alteration. Remember that water, which was the means of destroying the first heavens and earth, is what we would call our universal solvent. There are not very many materials in the material kingdom, mineral kingdom, and so forth, or rock kingdom. Not very many are not affected by water in some way or other. If it can't make any chemical work on it, it can do some erosion under enough pressure, heat, and so forth. Water is a symbol of evil. And so it was not existing until the overthrow. And after the final overthrow of the present heavens and earth, there'll be no more water, no more sea. Just a few things like that in mind. Some very significant things which we sometimes go over and don't notice. For the former, not the first, former heaven and the former earth were passed away. That's the ones in which we have now. The earth and the heaven which we are part of now. Passed away, gone. No more sea. Now, can you imagine this earth, its size wasn't changed in this renovation. I don't know what it would or not, but if there's not changed, think of the great population that could live on this earth if the seas were taken away, which takes about 3/4 of the surface of the earth. Think of the great population there is on the earth now. And a lot of the land is wasteland, which can't bear a population. Yet a terrific population of people on this earth. Wow, suppose it was all perfect all over. There won't be any heat of any kind to bother. There won't be any need of it for the kind of beings that's there. No water. No freezing. I don't know what the atmosphere will be if they have one. If there's no water, it'd be a different kind of an atmosphere we have, and that'd be hard for us to imagine an atmosphere without water in it. Just what would you do with it, you see? An entirely different condition, one of which we can hardly conceive. I beg of you to spend some time and study on just that very thing and see what you make of it. Some of you folks have had a little science and things that you can bring out some of these things. And so there's no war scene. Heaven and earth passed away. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. Coming down from heaven. What heaven? The third heaven that John saw, in which Paul told about John seeing in 2 Corinthians, the 12th chapter. John had had this vision that we're talking about, the book of Revelation. He had had that vision 14 years before Paul wrote this second epistle to the Corinthians. And I had placed the writing of John, as we said in the introduction, at about A.D. 43. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, the third heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. Now, folks, bring this question up. Does that New Jerusalem exist today? It comes down out of the third heaven, so it isn't in the heaven we have now. Where is it if it is existing? Well, you see, you don't know, do you? Well, I know a lot of people speak about it. Paul spoke about the city which is above, but he was speaking prophetically. You'll find references. David knew about it. He said, I'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever, the New Jerusalem, a house with many mansions that the Lord spoke about in John 14. Abraham was looking for it, as we see in Hebrews 11. Been revealed to him. And so the book of Revelation is not the first news that we have about a new heavens and new earth and a new Jerusalem and a temple, a house of God. Nothing new. And prepared as a bride adorned for a husband. Now, folks, do you know that there are a lot of people who say that it is a bride, but doesn't say that. It says like a bride. As a bride, not a bride. Now, if you want to talk about the bride, that's Israel. Not the church. The church is never the bride of Christ. It's Israel. But they're not now, because about A.D. 64, they were divorced. As prophesied in Hosea chapters 3 and 4, in chapter 6, they'll come to an end someday and he'll receive his wife back to himself. That's Israel. Be restored. The third day, after 2 days, the third day he'll be restored and so on. That is in the future. That's coming. When you're reading, when you're studying these scriptures, try to think of all of the others that's related that you can, so as to get a complete picture in how the things are worked out. And prepared as a bride adorned for a husband. Why, that city would be a beautiful one. No dirt, no water, no vegetation. And that city we have described later on with its gates, its walls, and the foundations of the walls with the names of the 12 apostles in them. All of those things, more or less in detail. And a monstrous big city, but we'll go into the details of that in a later lesson. For right here, I see that the time is up. Dear Father, we are thankful for thy word, and we know it is truth. And we do thank thee that it was given us a record of thy Son, and that he came that he might declare thee, make thee known to us, that it might know thee as a Father, know thee for thy loving kindness, and thy love especially for us that thou didst give thy Son. Thankful for this mystery that's been revealed to us. All the wonderful blessings we have in the heavenlies in him. Thankful that he has finished his work. He was faithful even unto death. And that through him we have life. We have this great hope. We do ask that thou guide and direct us in our studies, that we may find all the things that are there that can apply to us and give us a lesson that we might learn, that we may be able to comprehend all thy loving kindness and the reasons for thy creation and all of these things that go along with the revelation, especially from thy servant Paul. And so guide us and direct us so we may understand all that we need to understand, that we might all come unto a unity of the faith, that we may keep the unity of the Spirit, and that we may at last realize our great ambition of being in the heavenly places with Christ, through Christ we ask it. Amen.